All right, Matthew chapter 13. Matthew 13, we begin in verse 24. It says, "Another parable put he forth unto them, saying, The kingdom of heaven is likened unto a man which sowed good seed in his field. But while men slept, his enemy came and sowed tares among the wheat and went his way. And when the blade was sprung up and brought forth fruit, then appeared the tares also. So the servants of the householder came and said unto him, Sir, didst not thou sow good seed in thy field? From whence hath these, then hath it tares? He said unto them, An enemy hath done this. The servant said unto him, Wilt thou then that we go and gather them up? But he said, Nay, lest while ye gather up the tares, you root up also the wheat with them. Let both grow together until the harvest, and in the time of the harvest I will say to the reapers, Gather ye together first the tares, and bind them in bundles to burn them, but gather the wheat into the barn." This parable uses the figure of a farmer sowing seed, just as the last parable that we looked at did. And the difference is, in this parable, is the emphasis is not so much on the seed, the good seed, or how it did, but rather it is focused on the intrusion of bad seed. Okay, and which was, as this text tells us, was sown by the enemy. So to start with, the landowner's probably a farmer. He's planted his field. Obviously, he sowed with great intentions. He sowed good seed, wheat seed, which landed likely on very fertile soil. He had it well prepared. But unbeknownst to him, while men slept, it said, so it'd be while him or anybody else that might have been alerted, were asleep, then the enemy came under the cover of darkness and sowed the bad seed, which was seed for tares, okay? And he sowed it amongst the wheat, okay? It wasn't just come in, but he sowed it across the wheat field, okay, where it was mixed in with the wheat. And so a tare, first of all, let's talk about that. That is a weed. It's a variety of, a darnel weed, and they closely resembled wheat during its growth stages. And it was not until the wheat was ripened and began to bring forth some grain, it wasn't until then that there could be any distinguishment made between the two. They just looked alike. Notice verse 26, it says, "But when the blade was sprung up and brought forth fruit," that's talking about the wheat right there. The wheat begins to produce its fruit. It says, "Then appeared the tares also." It made it, when the wheat began to produce its fruit of grain, even in the early stages, that's what was the distinguishing factor, because tares don't do that, okay? They looked very similar prior to the production of grain, and then they were distinguished by the grain. And so it's when the wheat is ripened that they're able to tell the difference between the two. And so by the time this has taken place, you can think about, or I try to imagine on my own, the damage that would be done. You've spent your seed wheat, okay, which a farmer would keep each year. You know, some would go to make bread and survive on, some would be bartered, and they would always keep seed wheat so you could go back with the next crop. So you've kept your seed wheat back. You've had full intentions of doing all the work, cultivating the soil, preparing the ground in every way, hopefully getting the right rains and this sort of thing, and put the seed in the ground. And then you have this enemy, Satan, come along and sow these tares. The enemy represents Satan, if you will. And so first of all, you've got half of your land's production has been wasted. During the course of that growth season, because it's having to produce, not having to, but it's supporting, if you will, the weeds along with the wheat, the space, the nutrients, the moisture that could be spent on the wheat is also going to the tares, the weeds, okay? And so that moisture is, it has great limitations to it. And so not only is it going to be a lot of weeds out there, but they're going to cause the wheat itself to suffer in its production. Furthermore, when you get down the road and it's time for harvest, then the harvest itself is going to be much more laborious with this situation because the two are mixed together, and the reapers would have to go to a lot more trouble along the way. They'd be a lot more methodical, if you will, of retrieving the wheat plants or retrieving actually the tares first without getting the wheat plants, okay? So it's just bad news altogether. It naturally just is a bad problem for the landowner himself. Apparently, these are some side things that I read. Apparently, because of the close resemblance of the wheat and the tares, this sort of sabotage that we've just read about of someone's crops had kind of become a popular method of revenge towards your enemies. You see, you could slip in there in the cover of darkness. Not like you have to break in their house and get caught. You go out in the fields where everybody's asleep, and they could go in there and they could, a spiteful person could go in there and partially destroy their enemy's crop or their perceived enemy's crop, reduce the value of it to a great degree. And this was a common enough occurrence, if you will, that the Roman government had a specific law to deal with this crime, okay? So that means it was fairly common. Notice verse 27, it says, "So the servants of the householder came and said unto him, Sir, didst not thou sow good seed, and in thy field, and from whence hath it these tares?" So any farmer knows, even you and I, not being farmers, we know that there's going to be a certain amount of weeds show up in a crop. If it's a garden or whether it's a full-blown crop, there are going to be a certain, at least a few weeds that are going to show up in the crop. But this was enough that the workers, the farmhands, were alarmed by it, okay? And they come to him and bring it to his attention. And he said unto them, "An enemy hath done this," verse 28. And the servant said unto him, "Wilt thou then that we go and gather them up?" So here's the landowner's approach to it. The damage is done, and trying to fix it now was just going to exacerbate the problem. Because he goes on and elaborates on that in verse 29. He said, "Nay, lest while ye gather the tares, you root up also the wheat with them." And simply he's just recognizing that the damage being done already, if we go in there and try to do something about it now, we're going to do more damage to the wheat that's still there that by uprooting it and trampling on it and everything else. And so he's got a plan that's going to involve time and patience. And it draws a picture to me in my mind of when we see as people, when we see something going wrong in our life, okay, and the tendency is to want to fly in there, take control, take it into our own hands and try to fix it, right? And yet the Lord says, much like the landowner does here, the Lord says, "Hey, just hang on for a minute. What's already has happened has happened. Let's wait," and they're in the right timing. I don't know about you, but there have been more times than one that I want to take things in my own hands, and God says, "Whoa, whoa, 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 just hold up. Be patient, and I'll sort this out at a later time." And he does, and he's able to, through patience and time, set the record straight and make things right. And so I think this is very much a picture of that. Notice verse 30. He says, "Let both grow together until the harvest. And in the time of harvest, I will say to the reapers, gather ye together first the tares, and bind them in bundles to burn them, but gather the wheat into the barn." This parable is not explained. We're going to see some explanations, other parables along the way. Well, no, I apologize. This one is explained. I'm thinking about the next one. This one will be explained beginning in verse 34, so we'll get that in future time. But the time of the harvest is an image of judgment, okay? a time when it's going to be cut and dry between those who are wheat or those who are tares, or in other words, those who belong to God and those who do not belong to God. At the moment, the landowner says, look, it's too much trouble to try to make that distinguishment. We're going to cause more damage than good. He says, let's just wait. Well, the harvest is a time, again, a picture of that judgment, and where it'll be well defined when the reapers get in there of what is a wheat and what is a tare. It'll be known what to do with the tares when they're gathered up, to bundle them for the fire, and the wheat to be harvested and put into the barn. But notice in the end here, or at the time of harvest, it's not the farmhands. Remember, it was the farmhands earlier that come to him and says, what's going on? Why all the tares and the wheat, you know? But this time, when it comes time for harvest, it's not the farmhands who are making the distinction and who are carrying out the harvest. It's the reapers. He gives them a total different name, okay? The reapers, which we're going to see later when we see the explanation of this parable, are the angels, which God designated by God to carry out that process. And what I think we can learn from this, friends, is though we can form our opinion about people, okay, we really don't know. In reality, we're not sure who belongs to God and who does not, okay? Only God knows. And sometimes I think we get guilty of, now don't misunderstand me, we should exercise discernment. Jesus says you'll know them by their fruit, okay? There's an element of discerning, you know, look, this person doesn't seem to be, but deep down we don't know. We don't know. I think we're going to get to heaven one of these days, and somebody that we thought were absolute reprobates but were truly saved at some point in their life. On the other hand, I think we're going to be shocked that there are going to be some people missing that we thought were saints. And so we just have to, I think it's just good for us to learn that we'll do well to recognize that, hey, we don't know for sure who's saved and who's not. And so let God make that judgment. So let him do the weeding, if you will. So let's move on to, better hurry here, but verse 31 says, another parable put he forth unto them, saying, the kingdom of heaven is like a grain of mustard seed, which a man took and sowed in his field, which indeed is the least of all seeds, but when it is grown, it is the greatest among herbs, and becometh a tree, so that the birds of the air can come and lodge in the branches thereof. Now, we have to consider that during the time that this is being spoken, the time of Jesus' ministry that this is being said, most of the religious Jews have already wholeheartedly rejected him as the Messiah, okay? At this point, most of the, now again, I say most, there's people like Nicodemus and what's the guy from Arimathea? What was his name? You remember? Joseph of Arimathea. So there are exceptions, but most of the religious Jews had wholeheartedly rejected him as Messiah. Beyond that, a greater part of the multitudes that had been following Jesus, though they had gathered to hear him and they were showed some interest, were really pretty superficially attached, and we find that along the way that is the case. And so really, at this point, there were still a relatively few true disciples that were following Jesus. There were beyond the 12, we know that, but then also there wasn't a great amount of them at this point, and really not going to be until after Jesus ascends into heaven and we get into the book of Acts when you start seeing the thousands, okay? So, but yet this group, this small group of disciples continually hearing Jesus talk about the kingdom. And we have to imagine that those people who were faithful to him would be probably scratching their heads a little bit, thinking, okay, how is this kingdom he's talking about going to advance when there's just us? And there's so few citizens of this kingdom. And especially in light of these parables that he's given that seem to indicate that a low percentage of those who hear the word of God are actually going to be fertile ground or have hearts to receive it. So you got, according to the one parable, you got about 25%. Okay, and so they're hearing that. On top of that, you have a parable like the wheat and the tares that talks about the enemy that's out there sowing bad seed. He's coming, he's battling against the gospel, okay, sowing heresies and things like that. And so so all of this would lend, you can imagine, towards a certain amount of skepticism by his disciples. And again, I'm just not trying to say that is the case, but you would think it probably could be. And so this parable comes at a very good time, this parable of the mustard seed. And it compares the growth of the tiny mustard seed into a full-grown plant. Jesus says this, it could be regarded as a tree. It compares that to the advancement of God's kingdom, okay, where God's going to take a tiny few influential, solid Christians and build his kingdom, okay? Now, just as a side note, the skeptics have argued from this text that Jesus was fallible, because he uses two things he says there. One is that the mustard seed is the smallest of all seeds. Two, he refers to it as growing up to a tree. Okay, they argue that those are untrue statements, that a mustard seed is not, in fact, the smallest of seeds, and that a mustard seed, a mustard tree, or plant, does not grow to the size of trees. But granted, and to just put this in context, a mustard seed was the smallest of seeds that would be used for the garden plants and this sort of thing. He's talking to people about planting in their garden, okay? And so, yeah, there's weed seeds and there's very small grass seeds and things that would, I don't even know what a mustard seed looks like, but according to what I read, would actually be technically smaller. But when you start looking at garden plants, in fact, that word herb, it literally means vegetables, okay? And he speaks of the herbs there in verse 32. It literally means vegetables, and you'll find that those seeds are, some of them are quite large. Okay, so there's no error there in him referring to this being the smallest of the seeds of garden plants. Furthermore, it was common, the seed of a mustard was so small that it was common rhetoric, if you will, or a metaphor used in the olden times to compare small things to a mustard seed. Outside of what Jesus said, it was a common term used, okay? And so that settles that. He wasn't wrong about that. And then secondly, most mustard plants are small bush-type plants, okay? But in Palestine, there is, in fact, a mustard seed. It's not referred to as a tree, but a mustard plant that grows to up to 15 feet in the air, which would be regarded as the size of a tree, okay? And so there's no error in that. And so we know that that's baloney, okay? And plus, we see that Jesus was not speaking scientifically or technically here. He's speaking parabolically. He's trying to teach them by parables and make certain points. Obviously, you can't hold him to the science of that. He's trying to communicate, use a metaphor to illustrate a point to them, okay? And so there is no explanation of this parable, okay? They're down the road, we're going to read the explanation of the wheat and tares here in a minute, and or not here in a minute, next time we're together. But there's not a explanation of this parable, but the meaning is fairly clear, and we're not going to take time this evening to talk about that. We'll do that next time we're together. But in a general sense, you see the comparison of relatively small group of disciples. They're really going to turn the world upside down, and you got a relatively small, tiny seed that grows to 15 foot tall mustard plant tree. Okay, all right, appreciate you guys, and we will get going out of here, okay? And we'll look forward to seeing you back here Sunday. Ladies, don't forget about the party. Call somebody, invite somebody.